Unto You, a Christmas Sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
The angel can tell those shepherds and tell us, this child has been born unto you. This child has been born for you.
And we'll send you a CD of this sermon for any size gift before the end of the year. Make a secure online donation today, issuesetc.org. Thanks for thinking of us at the end of 2011.
Turning to the subject that probably keeps us busy most days, I've worked 9 to 5 for a lot of years now. I actually don't work 9 to 5. My work hours are a little stranger than that, and sometimes it's later or earlier, and sometimes it bleeds over into the evening. But most of us think of our jobs just in that way, as a job, as a necessary evil in our lives, that if our lives were the way they should be, we would work as little as possible and then retire as early as possible because we think of the normal state, the best state of affairs for us human beings as leisure rather than labor. But is that a Christian idea in any sense of the word? Joining us to talk about human labor and the image of God, Dr. T. David Gordon. He's Associate Professor of Religion at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, author of several great books, Why Johnny Can't Preach and Why Johnny Can't Sing Hymns. He's also has a book called Vocation, Work Quietly with Your Hands. Dr. Gordon, welcome back.
Hey, Todd. Good to hear from you.
You say, and I happen to share your sentiment, you say that you really have no plans to retire. Why?
Yeah, well, you know, I sort of ended the essay with Modern Reformation with that comment as sort of an aside. I don't want to suggest that I oppose the idea per se, but I personally don't have any plans. And part of the reason is I don't think that the cultural norm today that at age 65 or perhaps even earlier, we all just stop working productively, I don't think that cultural norm finds any warrant in Scripture. So if there's some kind of a governmental policy that says we're going to have to do that to save the economy, that's fine, and I'm more than willing to consider that. But as I understand the Imago Dei, we not only imitate God by resting from labor one day in seven, we imitate God by laboring the other 6 days. And so I don't see anything in the Scripture that teaches as a norm that we work for a certain number of years and then just suddenly pull the plug.
So to get kind of back around to that, let's talk about the relationship that you see between human labor and the created image of God.
Yeah, it's the material we see in Genesis 1 and 2, and the way I put it is we often talk about the Sabbath command or the Sabbath institution. We really could call it just as truthfully the labor command or the labor institution, because six-sevenths of that command involves labor, and only one-seventh of it requires resting from that labor. So for some peculiar reason, we've chosen to call it the Sabbath command, when in fact it's also a labor command, isn't it?
Now, and I think this is true not only among Americans, I think Europeans probably suffer from this just a little bit more, and that is the notion that labor is a necessary evil in a man's life, that it doesn't really, is not a good end in itself. Talk about that, if you would, Dr. Gordon.
Yeah, I would think that it's a very good thing in and of itself. You think of the comment that Ecclesiastes makes on it, even in the fallen condition, where curses have become laborious, even then, the author of Ecclesiastes talks about what a great thing it is for a person. Nothing better, he says, I saw there's nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his work, for that is his lot. So Ecclesiastes thinks this is just a wonderful thing. You know, it's like the paper napkin or peanut butter. What a great thing being able to labor. So part of the Imago Dei is, in fact, to labor. And notice, Todd, even the word that we use. If we call it work versus labor, work is a four-letter word and suggests something unbecoming. Labor is a nobler, at least neutral-sounding word. And it ought to be. It's a wonderful thing to discover why God created us. A hawk loves to be flying through the air. A dolphin loves to be swimming through the sea. Why shouldn't humans made in God's image love doing productive things with the created order that he worked productively in? It's what we should do.
So labor is not part of the curse. Labor is certainly put under the curse of our fall into sin. But
that's right.
Labor precedes
the fall.
Labor
becomes laborious because of the curse. It becomes laborious, but labor itself is not a curse.
Talk about labor before the fall, because that is, I mean, it says he put him in the garden to work it and to till it.
Right, right. And it's curious language, by the way. The Hebrew says to serve it and to guard it. It's Eved and Shamar, interesting. And so I think also he was to have guarded its holiness. That is to say, he not only shouldn't have listened to the serpent, he should have never let him in there. The presence of the serpent in God's holy temple was a desacralizing of it, and he should have guarded it better. He should have guarded it and prevented that from happening at any rate, which Jesus does, I think, when he cleanses the temple in John 2. He does what the last Adam didn't do. He guards God's holy place and keeps the unholy out of it. But yeah, he is supposed to work in that created order. The assumption is this wonderful thing that God made and five times said it was good, and on the sixth occasion said, Tov Ma'od, very good. Now he turns Adam loose into there and says, you know, go for it and discover all the wonderful properties that God put here. It's pleasing to the eye. It's good for food. It's both beautiful and practical. Go discover all of its potential for beauty and all of its potential for utility.
So even after the fall, when labor, as you say, becomes laborious, labor can still serve as a good for ourselves and for our neighbors?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there are still potentials in the created order for both beauty and practicality, and we are still to take pleasure, appropriate pleasure, in discovering those potentials.
Somebody says, "Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but you're really talking about some sort of utopia, aren't you, Dr. Gordon? Because my job is unrewarding. My job is not just laborious. It bores me to tears. It's unfulfilling. All of those pursuit of happiness kind of things that Americans seem to be so addicted to. My job doesn't get me any farther along in the pursuit of happiness." How do you respond?
Well, it's certainly, if you were to interview 100 people, Todd, we would get a variety of different comments, wouldn't we? Some people would say that they find that their labor is very fulfilling, and some would say it's somewhat fulfilling, and some would say it's not very fulfilling, and some would say it's not at all fulfilling. And if you look at the pay scale for different professions, there is ordinarily an inverse relationship. That is to say, the jobs that people find personally very satisfying don't compensate very well. And the jobs that are not very personally satisfying sometimes compensate better because you have to pay people more to get them to do it. There are probably jobs that compensate better for a PhD than teaching at a Christian liberal arts college. But Grove City is a wonderful place to be. I love being here. And if someone were to offer me $10,000 or $15,000 to return to a software firm that I once worked at and enjoyed immensely, you know, my answer is no, I wouldn't take the $15,000. I'm happier here. I love what I'm doing.
So are you saying, we've got about 30 seconds before we break, are you saying that man is created to work?
Yes. And I think in the life to come, we will continue to labor. We won't sit around twiddling our thumbs all day. I think that we will write symphonies, we will write novels, we will do many things that we take pleasure in laboring to do.
Dr. T. David Gordon is our guest. When we come back, we've got another 10 minutes with him. We're talking about human labor and the image of God. When we come back, a concept near and dear to my heart as a Lutheran pastor, the doctrine of vocation. Stay tuned. Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today. Have you ever wanted to delve into the writings of the early church fathers, but didn't know where to begin? Well, we have just the resource for you. It's our Book of the Month for December, A Year with the Church Fathers, Meditations for Each Day of the Church Year. You can find out more at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase A Year with the Church Fathers, Meditations for Each Day of the Church Year by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. A Year with the Church Fathers, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking human labor and the image of God. Dr. T. David Gordon is our guest. He's Associate Professor of Religion at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, author of the books Why Johnny Can't Preach and Why Johnny Can't Sing Hymns, and he's also written an article for the latest issue of Modern Reformation magazine titled Vocation, Work Quietly with Your Hands. Let's turn to the subject of vocation. It's something that 16th century reformer Martin Luther was very keen on. I think it's really one of the most freeing insights of his into biblical teaching, that your station in life, that place where God puts you, and they're various for all of us, we have many of them at the same time, is where you find your neighbor, is where your neighbor is served, and where Christ is served. Talk about that.
Yeah, it was a wonderful thing, you know, the Reformation doctrine of labor. In 1981, you know, John Paul II wrote this really wonderful treatise on labor that struck me as quite reformational itself. It was really remarkable. I don't recall reading in it anywhere even the distinction between sacred and holy callings, which is really remarkable for a Catholic document to not emphasize that. And it understood, as Luther had understood, this great sense that God the Creator has a purpose for all that He makes. I think that's the doctrine, the theological doctrine underneath the doctrine of labor. And so God creates fish to swim, birds to fly, and He creates us to care for His good Creator, His created order, to discover its wonderful properties, to serve and bless the human race, and to reflect the glory of God. So to discover, I would say, not our form of labor, but our forms of labor, the variety of ways that we labor, is to grow in wisdom in being what we were created to be. And so we may have some labor that we do for our employers. I do that when I teach a Greek class, for instance. But I labor around the house. One of our antique pieces of furniture had a leg snapped last night, and we noticed it had been repaired once before, not to our knowledge, and so as I have opportunity tonight or tomorrow, I plan to repair that. It's a great old antique, and I'm going to put it back together. That's labor also. There I'm laboring to preserve this beautiful old antique that's been around for many generations, and rather than throw it on the heap, you know, I'm going to labor to put it back together correctly. That's labor also.
I mean, I think about this. I mean, it seems kind of silly, but I think it is still true at the same time. All summer long during the season when my grass is growing, I can go out and cut the grass thinking, all right, this is just something you got to do when you got a green lawn, something you have to do. Or, as I attempt to do, I'm cutting my grass not only for my family's well-being so that we can, you know, see the street, but also for my neighbor. I mean, I am, in a sense, helping keep the neighborhood looking nice, the property values up, and all of those things. By doing this, I don't have to go and ask my neighbor to pay me for it. I'm doing it out of service to neighbor just as well.
Absolutely. The woman across the street from us has some annuals that she brings in every year, just beautiful red tulips. No, she's not Dutch, and yet they line her sidewalk on either side and then line her bushes out there, and the whole neighborhood enjoys them. We actually literally see some cars drive up the road sometimes, and someone gets out with their smartphone and takes photographs of Gloria's flowers. They're so beautiful. And so, yeah, we cut our lawn to make God's created order look as good as it can and to serve those neighbors around us. I even switched to a non-petroleum mower last year. It's Gordon-powered. It's no longer petroleum-powered. And I think, you know, most men my age are spending money to be in a health club, and I'm out there pushing the old real mower that is driven by the friction, and it requires more effort to push it. But it's quiet. It creates no noise pollution, and it puts no pollutants of a chemical nature into the air. And I can go out there at midnight if I want with my hiking headlamp on and cut my grass because no one hears it. It's perfectly quiet. And sure, we take care of this because God created us to labor within his created order.
You say something in your article in Modern Reformation magazine that runs almost completely counter to the cultural wisdom, the received wisdom of the culture. You say, if we regard labor as something apart from, quote-unquote, who I really am, as something disconnected from ourselves, we will not find the joy that Ecclesiastes calls us to. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think that this is one of the problems with the term vocation when it comes to be the exclusive expression of our labor. When Paul says, whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, that means that whatever we do that's lawful is our labor, not just what we do professionally. And so I think I mentioned somewhere in the article that for 9 years, as I worked through my 4 degrees, I was a greenskeeper in the summer. I had no intention to be a professional greens mower. I didn't plan to cut fairways, tees, and greens the rest of my life. But for the 9 summers that I did it, I wanted to be the best greenskeeper there was. And I think I came close to it. One of the USGA men at one of the tournament times saw me working one of those and said he'd never seen anyone run that particular machine as well as I did. And the reason was, as a Christian, if I was going to cut greens in the summer, I was going to be the best, most versatile employee that my superintendent had at his disposal. I wanted to learn to run every piece of equipment and to run it professionally and confidently. What looks more beautiful than a golf course, well-maintained? And so that was my labor. It wasn't who I am. Who I am is a minister of the gospel and a Greek professor and professor of religion. But what I was doing during those summers was cutting greens. And those are happy memories, by the way. I still think very fondly back on those 9 summers because I did work hard, I did try to do a good job, and I took pleasure in doing a good job.
Can you speak briefly about the value of that? I mean, I don't want to drive a wedge between labor that is undertaken, say, of the mind and labor that is taken of the body. But the value of the physical nature of labor, especially as we live in a world that is physical in its fall and will be physical in its resurrection and recreation.
Yeah, it's really wonderful to note that if you looked at the Genesis narrative, when God makes Adam to be, an imitator of him, probably, for how many centuries was that narrative read before the Industrial Revolution? Where the plain assumption was it meant agrarian labor, maybe hunter-gatherer labor, but probably agrarian labor. And so it isn't until recently that anyone has thought of that in anything other than material terms. It would have for throughout most of Jewish and Christian history been understood as cultivating the good material earth that God not only made but out of which He made us. Right, we from the dust. Adam was made. We have this existential connection to the ground that Moses calls attention to when he says that Adam was created out of the dust of the ground. And so it's proper in the burial rites when we say, from the dust you were taken and to the dust you will return. In some sense, that is our natural material environment, and it's only the kind of Neoplatonic thought or later Gnostic thought that belittles that material order. Christians celebrate it. We rejoice in it. And those of us who, let's say, work in an office all day, many people love to then create a flower garden in the summer because it returns them to their natural roots.
So as we have been given to labor as a gift, even in the fallen world we occupy now, awaiting the resurrection, awaiting the new heaven and new earth, talk again, if you would, with about a minute left, about the labor that awaits us in the world to come, that we will be occupied, busy, and fruitful the way that God always intended us to be apart from sin.
Yeah, I think we will still have herb gardens at a minimum. We'll plant herb gardens. I won't get into the vegetarian questions now. We don't have time, but we'll at least have an herb garden that we will grow to season our food and this sort of a thing. I think that we will still have spinning wheels to make things out of clay. We will still enjoy getting our hands dirty in the mud, and I think like a seven-year-old after a summer storm, we will take off our shoes and feel the delightful mud oozing beneath our toes. If we lose the ability to enjoy that aspect of the created order, then we're lost.
Dr. T. David Gordon is Associate Professor of Religion at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, author of the books Why Johnny Can't Preach and Why Johnny Can't Sing Hymns. He's author of an article in the latest issue of Modern Reformation magazine titled Vocation, Work Quietly with Your Hands. You can purchase both of his books under the Listen On Demand page at our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. Gordon, thank you.
Yeah, Todd, great being with you. Have a blessed Advent season.
You too. Now, if you appreciate Issues Etc., Real Reformation Radio, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. Send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. That's LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois 62234. For any size gift here at the end of the year, we'll send you a CD with a sermon that I preached on Christmas and another that I've preached on the baptism of Jesus. Thanks for listening and keeping us in mind at the end of this year. We think of it as a necessary evil, but it isn't. It is a necessary thing, but it's a necessary good. That when we despise the task that God has put into our hands to do, we are, in a sense, just proving the depth of our fall. And when we view labor as merely a curse laid upon us, not labor that has become laborious because of our curse, and will be redeemed along with all other things in Christ in the resurrection, we miss an opportunity for the true joy of living as God's servants in this world, servants to our neighbors in this world, and the joy that awaits us in the world to come. I'm Todd Wilkin. In the second hour of the program, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris will join us, and then we'll talk about 4th century Bishop Ambrose.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.